The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
For this episode, we are listening to an episode of Philo Vance, a series distantly based on the dilettante detective created by S.S. Van Dyne, the pen name of New York art critic Willard Huntington Wright.
Van Dyne published the first of his 12 Philo Vance novels in 1926. The character is counted among the most iconic fictional detectives, alongside Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot, and Nero Wolfe. Impeccably dressed, Vance solved mysteries with his dizzying variety of skills and a disdainful, condescending manner. With Van Dyne's death in 1939, his final installment in the series was published complete, but without final revisions by the author.
Philo Vance was adapted to film several times, starting in 1929 with The Canary Murder Case, starring William Powell. Other actors to take on the role over the years included Basil Rathbone, Warren William, Wilfred Hyde White, and more. The trailer for the 1934 film, The Thin Man, features William Powell as Philo Vance talking to William Powell as Nick Charles.
According to Digital Deli's research, the detective was first brought to radio in 1943 in a series starring John Emery, although not much is known about this run, sponsored by Raleigh Cigarettes. Jose Ferrer starred as Philo Vance in a second series begun in 1945. But most existing episodes, including this one, are from a third series that debuted in 1946, featuring Jackson Beck in the title role. Beck may be best known as the announcer for radio's The Adventures of Superman. He also played Perry White and Alfred Pennyworth when Batman made a guest appearance. All of the radio versions of Philo Vance appear to have muted the detective's most distinctive traits, but not his love of mysteries, as we will find out as we listen to The Cipher Murder Case from Philo Vance, first broadcast April 26th, 1949.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Quiet tonight, ain't it, Mike?
Yeah, but I don't mind. Drive around another 2 hours, call into headquarters, and somebody else can have this patrol car for the next shift. Me, I'm going to bed.
Nice houses on this street, huh?
Well, they're big, say that for 'em. People live in them, got lots of dough, say that for 'em.
Yeah.
How'd you like to live with a house like that and on the corner?
Yeah, not bad. Afraid Maggie wouldn't like it, though. Too many rooms to clean.
Ah, she wouldn't have to worry about that. Servants, pal. You'd have to have a mess of servants.
Yeah, you don't know Maggie. She wants to do everything herself. I never saw anything like
Eddie,
it.
Eddie, look.
Where?
Coming out of that big house we just passed. Two guys. They're shoving guns in their pockets. Stop this heap. We're getting out.
Right with you, Mike. Get your gun out. Looks like we're in for a little action. Hey, you two, stop. Stop or we'll shoot.
They aren't stopping.
Let's let them have it. Right.
Yeah, they got the same idea first. See how they like it. They're only half a block away. We'll grab them, Eddie.
Won't have to grab both of them. One of them's hit. Look, he's staggering.
Yeah, but look at the other guy. He's got his gun against his buddy. Hey, don't!
He shot his own pal. How I'd like this shot to get him.
My turn.
We're both missed. He makes that car that's parked there. We're sunk.
Well, he's made it, all right. And there he goes.
All right, let's go back and get our crate. We can chase him.
Now, let's take a look at this buddy. The guy got away.
He's done for. Through. Take a look. Ever see him before?
Nope. Oh, get the people starting to come around. All right, everybody. Get back. Go on home. Go to bed. Take a look for identification, Eddie.
Right.
All right, look, everybody. Nothing's going on. The show's over. Go on, get back to bed. Get back to bed, will
you? Hey, Mike.
Yeah?
We got a real mystery on our hands. First two guys stick up a place, then one of them kills the other guy, and look what I found in the other one's pocket. A piece of paper. All it's got on it is two words. Live on. Now, what's that mean?
Mr. Parker, boss.
Don't bother me, Larry.
I don't bother people, Mr. Parker. I do just like I'm told all the time. All the time.
Well, do what you're told. I told you not to bother me.
He's sore at me, boss. Sore at me.
Of course not, Larry. I'm just trying to work out some instructions for our next job. Matter of fact, I'm very pleased with you.
Oh, thanks,
you
boss.
You did very well last night, robbing the Hilton home and shooting Joe when the cops hit him.
I'm glad you liked it, Mr. Parker. Joe would have started talking if the cops grabbed him alive. He was hit in the leg and couldn't keep going, so I knocked him off. I done right?
You most certainly did. Now, just hold everything momentarily, Larry. I'm not sending you on the next job. I've got other friends, you know.
Oh, sure, sure, I know. I know, but ain't the cops got your phone tapped? That's what you said.
Well, they suspect I'm in back of these private home holdups, Larry, but they can't prove anything. And while they can tap this phone, they can't trace whoever it is I'm calling. That's impossible on a dial phone.
Yeah.
The message for tonight is hole pin.
Hole pin.
That's right. Take care of things just like we planned, will you?
Don't give it another thought. So long.
Goodbye, my friend. Good luck to you.
Hey, gee, boss, you're smart. Really smart, I mean.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you very much. But I have help. A great deal of help. And from the most unexpected places and people.
And then, Mr. Vance, the paper goes on to say that the robber who killed his accomplice is being sought by the police.
Who expect to make an arrest shortly.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Vance. How did you know?
Oh, I'm smart, Miss Williams. Didn't you know?
Gosh, Mr. Vance, I've only been working for you for 3 months. You can't expect a girl to know everything in 3 months.
No, I guess not. I think, though, that...
Miss Williams, Vance.
Oh, hello, Mr.
Vance. Well, hello, Markham. I've rather been expecting you. Miss Williams was just telling me about the mysterious message found in the dead hold-up man's pocket.
That's why I'm here, Vance. I'd like to talk to you about the whole thing, if I may.
Well, come right into my private office, Markham. Can't have the district attorney of our fair city flaunting a furrowed forehead to the world at large. Gives the town a bad name. In here, please.
Thank you, but I'm not worrying about this town getting a bad name. I'm worrying about someone giving me a rather bad time.
Sit down, Markham, please. And let's have your problem.
Right, Vance. As you must know, there have been quite a few holdups of fashionable parties in the past few months.
Yes, I've read about them. In fact, you and I have discussed them from time to time. Casually, of course. But you mentioned the police suspect of Mr. Edward Parker.
We do, but Parker's clever. He has two or three stooges he sends out on the jobs. But let's take that robbery last night up on 58th Street. The one where one of the thieves shot his buddy after the police had wounded him.
What about it, Markham?
We found a slip of paper in the dead man's pocket, Vance. It said just two words. Live on. Then we intercepted a message Ed Parker was telephoning to someone. That message said, hole pin. Those words have some kind of meaning, I'm sure.
They most certainly have, Markham. A very definite meaning.
Not to me.
I just want a second to make sure of what I'm saying. That robbery last night on 58th Street... was it at number 4360?
Yes, but the papers all carry that.
I didn't remember it from the papers, believe me. Now I think I can tell you where the next robbery will take place.
Oh, no, Vance,
yes, no. My friend. Of course, I'm not sure exactly when it will take place. But after I make a phone call, I think I'll be able to give you that information, too.
But, Vance, what you're saying is ridiculous. You can't possibly know that.
No? Well, I think I can. Just have the police at 2540 138th Street and see what happens. Yes, Markham, that's where the next hold-up attempt will be made.
I
so happy you're having a good time, Mr. Davis. I'm so glad you're enjoying yourself. Incidentally, there's young Alice Morton over at the refreshment table. Hmm. Wouldn't you like to join her?
Uh-huh. Definitely, Mrs. Blake.
I thought you would. Everybody, can I have your attention, please? At some particular time at every party, the hostess feels it her solemn duty to make an announcement. At the moment, duty calls. I think you'll all be glad to hear that we have with us that distinguished pianist, Dmitri Rabov, who has consented to play a few selections. Mr. Rabov. For his first number, Mr. Rabov plays the Rachmaninoff Prelude in G minor.
Okay, you at the piano. Hold it. Everybody stay still and nobody move. There's a stick-up. Lock the door, Jimmy. Cut that out, lady. Cut it out or you'll never do no screaming no more. And don't none of you guys get brave all of a sudden. All of you got too much jewelry on. My friend here's got a big bag he's going to put in the center of the floor. Go ahead, Jimmy. Out. Now. That's it. All you guys and dames, one at a time, starting from my left, dump your rocks into that bag. And don't hold out or I'll come get them myself. Hey, you. You fat dame. You started off. That's a go.
Open up this door. Open it up. This is the police.
Hey, it's the cops. Come on, Jimmy. Out them French windows and shut up.
Stop them, somebody.
Don't let nobody try it. That's what they get if they do. All right, bust through them French windows, Jimmy. Let's get going.
Open the door, somebody. Let the police in.
There they are. Which way they go?
Out the French windows. They might still be in the garden.
Okay, lady. Come on, Eddie. Let's get after them. They're around anywhere. We'll get them.
Coming, coming. Yes?
How do you do? I'm Philo Vance. You're Mrs. Blake?
Yes, I am. Please come in, both of you.
This is District Attorney Markham, Mrs. Blake.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Won't you gentlemen come in and sit down?
We're not going to stay very long, Mrs. Blake. We just wanted to speak to you about the party in your house last night.
It was terrible. If the police hadn't arrived, every one of my guests would have been robbed.
If Mr. Vance hadn't told us that there'd be a robbery attempt at this address, the police wouldn't have arrived so conveniently, Mrs. Blake. But we'd like a description of the men who held up your guests.
Now, let's see. They were both average height. The one with the gun had a long, thin nose and a cut under his right eye.
Uh-huh.
The other was, well, just an ordinary-looking person.
I see. Mrs. Blake, I understand your position in the social world, and I imagine that this was rather embarrassing to you.
Well, it would have been under ordinary circumstances, but there have been several attempted hold-ups at parties recently, so I don't feel too badly.
What we want to know is whether you recognized either of the two men, Mrs. Blake. Had you ever seen either one of them before?
I'm quite sure I didn't. They both wore masks, but from their general appearance, I'm certain I'd never seen either one.
We thought that perhaps they might have been servants employed either by you or some of your friends who were victims of previous robberies, Mrs. Blake.
I doubt that very much. Is there anything else, gentlemen?
I think not, Mrs. Blake. Thank you so much for your kindness.
It's quite all right. Please drop in again if you like. Only let's make it a less formal visit.
Well, thank you.
We may do that, Mrs. Blake. At least one of us might do that. That one of us being me.
I'd be glad to see you at any time, Mr. Vance. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Blake. What's getting into you, Emily? You going crazy?
No, I don't think so, Ed. Why?
Why? He gave Vance and Markham a perfect description of one of my boys. You'll blow this racket of ours sky high before we really get started.
You're such an alarmist, Ed. I didn't tell them anything they couldn't have gotten from any of the guests who were here last night. What do you want me to do, give them a false description so that the trail would lead directly to me?
I'm sorry, Emily. I guess I didn't think of that. Now, let's get back to what we were talking about before Vance and Markham got here.
I think we'd better talk about what happened when Vance and Markham got here. We can't use that code anymore, Ed. Vance has already broken it.
How do you know?
Markham said that Vance knew the holdup was to be here. They've tapped your wire, Ed, heard you give instructions in cipher, and broke the code.
That Vance is too smart. Maybe I ought to take care of him.
Maybe you shouldn't have started with him.
How'd I know he'd be called in on this case? There weren't supposed to be any murders, you know that. Larry killed Joe and the cop's bullet got him, but we didn't plan on that.
No. But in order to be successful at anything, Ed, it's well to be prepared for emergencies. Nothing ever goes entirely according to plan.
Well, our next job or two. Where's it going to be?
Let me see. I have the invitation right here in my desk. Oh. Mr. and Mrs. Cornelius Worthington requests the pleasure. Let me see. Tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
That's it, tomorrow night at the Worthington home. And if I know Celia Worthington, she'll have everybody who means anything in this town at her house.
Good. This time we don't fool around with codes or with anything else. This time I do the job myself. Larry and I.
I like that. That means there'll be only three ways to split. You and Larry and me.
Two and a half ways. We'll cut Larry's piece down to a half of what he's supposed to get. He never knows what he's going to get.
You know, Ed, I think we ought to give a little thought to Philo Vance. He might give us trouble.
Him? I don't think so. Let him interfere with this, and he won't know what he's going to get either.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Cipher murder case opened with the shooting of a holdup man by his own accomplice. In the dead man's pocket was found a code message which Vance succeeded in breaking down, to such an extent that when I told him we had tapped the telephone wire of a Mr. Ed Parker and heard him say, "Hole pin," Vance immediately gave the address of the next holdup attempt. We were able to thwart that effort as a consequence, but had no idea where the gang intended to strike again. It is for this reason that I'm calling on Vance, whom I expect to find in his office. Vance, where are you?
In my private office, Markham. Come right in.
I'm on the way. How are you today, Vance?
Very well, which apparently is more than I can say for you. What's bothering you, Markham?
This cipher case, Vance. We've continued to tap Ed Parker's phone, but we've gotten nothing from him that even resembles a code.
I didn't imagine you would.
You think he knows we've succeeded in figuring out his code?
I'm reasonably certain of that.
Just because the police broke up that holdup at Mrs. Blake's the other night?
That's only one reason, Markham. But the others aren't to be discussed right now.
Vance, you know the police broke that code Parker used. It took them some time. Yet you figured it in less than a minute.
I'll explain that to you, Markham, but not now. Right now, I'm wondering where that holdup mob will hit next, and how I can find out.
Well, they seem to be concentrating on gatherings of the elite. Strictly social stuff.
Really? Well, then the chances are that Mrs. Emily Blake would be invited to the next affair. And she did invite me to call on her, remember, Markham?
Yes.
I think I'll accept that invitation, my friend.
I see. You intend to get her to tell you when the next big social event will take place and perhaps ask you to accompany her. Vance, you're a very resourceful man.
That isn't the only reason I'm doing it, Markham. Don't forget, Mrs. Blake is a very charming woman.
Julia, Julia, hurry with my hair. I don't have all night, you know.
I know, Mrs. Blake. I won't be a moment. I've laid out all your jewelry on the dressing table. You can be ready in a moment after I get finished.
Well, then hurry up and get finished, why don't you? I'll get that myself. Stand in back of me and finish my hair while I'm talking.
Very well, madame.
Hello?
Emily, this is Cornelius Worthington.
Cornelius? Don't tell me I'm that late that you called to find out what was delaying me.
No, not quite. Emily, dear, there's a change in plans about the party tonight.
Oh?
Yes, one of the children's ill, and they've quarantined our house.
Oh, how dreadful, Corny.
We called the Applebees, and they're going to have our party at their house. Come there, won't you? I've got a dozen people to call, so I've got to cut this short. The Applebees are at 651.
651?
131st Street.
131st Street.
You don't mind, Emily?
Oh, it's perfectly all right, Connie. I understand. Toodaloo.
Oh, I'm finished, Mrs. Blake.
Oh, good. Now, hand me that telephone.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wait. There's someone at the door. Here, call this number and just give them this message. The message is Bop Pip.
Bop Pip?
Yes, do it right away, will you? I'll get that door myself.
I'll do it, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Coming.
Good evening. Please come in.
Good evening, Mrs. Blake. Why, you're staring at me. Is anything wrong? Is it the white tie or the topper?
It isn't either, Mr. Vance. Only you seem to look as if you belonged in a white tie. That's rather strange attire for a private investigator, isn't it?
Yes, but at the moment I'm not working at my chosen profession. You did invite me to call, didn't you?
Why, yes. But I'm going out tonight.
I thought you might be, hence these evening clothes. May I go with you?
Well, why not?
Thank you. By the way, Mrs. Blake, you look quite charming.
Thank you. My wrap, Vance, it's over by the chair.
Of course. Here you are. Beautiful shoulders, Mrs. Blake. Beautiful.
I'm going to run out of thank yous. But I warn you, it'll be long after you run out of compliments.
Perhaps. Where are we going, or shouldn't I ask?
We're going to a party.
Oh?
It was supposed to be held at the Worthingtons, but it's over at the Applebee's. That won't bother you any.
We're still going.
Of course.
It won't bother me any. Shall we go?
Vance, I think you're the most charming man I've ever known.
That, Mrs. Blake, speaks eloquently for my conceit and very badly for the other men with whom you've been. Are all social parties this dull?
No. Only the ones I've been to.
Score one for the distaff side of the combination. You know, I think we're getting along rather well.
I'm glad to hear that. We were, as far as I was concerned. But I'll have you know that when you walked into this room, every woman in the place turned to stare at you.
I didn't notice.
Used to that sort of attention, Vance?
Immune to it. Tell me, who is everybody here?
Well, let's see. That's Appleby Jr. over there. His dad owns mills or something. And next to him...
Mrs. Appleby?
Don't be naive. That's Celia Worthington.
Oh.
Mrs. Appleby is over by the piano with Cornelius Worthington.
Cozy, isn't it? What happens when it comes time to go home?
See that light switch next to you?
Yes.
At midnight, somebody turns that out, and everybody rejoins the partner he came here with.
No wonder people are looking so strangely at us. Tell me more about the others.
Well, there's Montgomery Todd over there.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Todd is the tall man looking vaguely around the room.
And Mrs. Todd?
Well, she's the one Montgomery is looking vaguely around the room for. She's the thin woman over by the palms at the other end of the room. Very wealthy.
Isn't everybody here?
Practically.
Okay, everybody. Don't anybody do anything except what I tell them and nobody will be hurt.
Another robbery.
All right, quiet.
Sort of an epidemic lately, isn't it?
Now, look, all of you, you've all got jewels. They're probably all insured. Now, we want them and we don't want any trouble getting them. I want all the men to turn their backs. The lights. What happened to the lights?
Hey, boss, there's a trap. Let's get out of here fast.
I guess I can turn the lights on now, don't you think, Mrs. Blake?
Oh, you acted very quickly, Vance. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you, too, Mrs. Blake. Perhaps you didn't act as quickly, but your acting was very good just the same.
Markham speaking.
Markham, this is Vance. I've just left Mrs. Blake. Party we were going to switched addresses at the last moment.
Yes, I know. My men found only servants' home when they went to cover the Worthington house.
Two men just tried to hold up the guests at this party, Markham. I slipped away to call you and report.
Oh, glad you did. Sergeant Heath found out where the party was. He just called in to say he picked up two men who were fleeing from the Appleby Mansion. Come on down here, Vance. I'll have them here in a few moments.
I'll be there, Markham, and I'll bring Mrs. Blake with me. I'm quite sure she can supply all the identification we need. Right in here, Mrs. Blake, if you will. This is District Attorney Markham's office.
This is all very distasteful to me, Vance.
I'm sorry, but it has to be done. Please come in.
All right.
Just a moment, please. Just a moment. Hello, Vance. Glad you're here. Good evening, Mrs. Blake.
Hello, Mr. Markham.
Mrs. Blake, we picked up these two men as they were running from the Appleby house an hour ago. Can you identify them as the men who tried to hold up the guests of the party?
Well, no. No, I can't.
They're the men who tried to hold up tonight's party, Markham. I recognize them.
Thank you, Vance. I guess that's all we need. We can take them in and break up the mob that's been praying at society functions.
Do you have all of the mob members, Markham?
We have Parker here. He's the one whose phone we had tapped. And Larry Dayton, that's the short individual in the corner there. We think he's Parker's number one helper. There may be one or two others, but we'll get them.
I'm quite sure you will. You might as well have everyone connected with the thefts, Markham. For instance, you might take this very important member of the gang, Mrs. Emily Blake.
What?
I? Mr. Vance, you can't mean
that. Are you sure, Vance?
Quite. And I can mean that, Mrs. Blake. I can do more than mean it. I can prove it.
I'd like nothing better than to relax at the end of a case, Vance, but we've gotten confessions from Mrs. Blake and Ed Parker, and I'm still not relaxed.
Well, Markham, what's the trouble?
You know, I told you the police broke that code that Parker was using, but never explained it to me. I want to know first how you broke it, and so quickly.
Oh, that? Well, let me see. The original code message found on the dead man was, "Live on," right?
Yes.
And the robbery the dead man was fleeing from took place at 4360 58th Street.
Yes.
The letters in the words, "Live on," became the numbers 4360 and 58, Markham. By use of a code word, each letter becomes a number. That's why when you intercepted Parker's message about hole pin, I was able to tell you the address of the next attempted stick-up.
But how could you have broken the code so quickly?
The minute I saw it, I knew it as well as I knew my own name. In fact, it was my own name.
Your own name? What?
Philo Vance. The P was 1, the H 2, the I 3, the L 4, and so on.
Well, I'll be darned. They picked your name. I wonder why.
Two reasons. One, it was known to everybody involved. Two, they never thought I'd be called in on a mere series of robberies.
Hmm. Well, that brings me up to the question of Mrs. Blake's guilt, Vance.
That? Well, it started because I believed there had to be somebody on the inside tipping off the gang as to where these parties were being held.
Uh-huh.
I didn't suspect Mrs. Blake until after the robbery at her house when, in an effort to divert suspicion from herself, she described one of the masked thieves too well.
How do you mean, too well?
She said he had a cut under his eye. Now, if he had worn a mask, and we know he did, she couldn't have seen the cut. That got me to thinking. And then I learned that Cornelius Worthington was giving a party. I went to him and got him to switch his party to the Applebee's house.
Why?
Well, Worthington was to wait at his home and escort every other guest to the Applebee's personally. There, the guests were to be told the phone was out of order. But Worthington was to call Mrs. Blake and tell her about the change in plans for the party.
Oh, I see now. Then when the party was held up, it was only Mrs. Blake who could have been in touch with Ed Parker to tell him the new address.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Anything else, Markham?
I think not, Vance. I do think that lack of funds and a desire to maintain her social position must have put Mrs. Blake in the middle of this situation.
I imagine so. But let's forget her and the middle of this situation. Let's realize we've reached the end of the Cipher murder case.
Was the Cipher murder case from Philo Vance here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
Tim brought that to us.
I did.
That's your choice this week. I've got lots of things to say, as we all do, I'm sure. But let's just start with why is this here?
Who did this?
The story, as was told the last time we did Philo Vance, was I saw, hey, there's a series called Philo Vance. It made me think of the REM song, Can't Get There From Here, which sings about a town called Philomath, which is unrelated, but it made me happy. Like, oh, that's a fun song. Oh, this must be a fun series. And so I basically picked a title out at random just for, that's a fun title, when we did it last time, which was the Cheesecake Murder Case.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. And so I thought, let me pick another one out and see if I like that one as well.
At random?
Yeah. I mean, I chose the title of, like, I like Codes and Ciphers. Surely I'll like this.
Right.
Even if this series is not a, you've got to hear this series of radio episodes, mm-hmm. it's clever and it punches above its weight class, I dare say.
It's not exactly Da Vinci Code level of ciphering.
No, it's not. That being said, I tried to play fair when listening to it. Like, if I was in the day, I could not pause. You got to know beforehand you're going to need to write some stuff down. So I just let it go as it was. And like, I was delighted to discover what it actually was.
All right.
As long as we are on the topic of ciphers.
Yes.
Are you aware of S.S. Van Dyne's 20 rules for writing fair play mysteries?
I know. I didn't put it together. It was S.S. Van Dyne. Or I might have stumbled upon that last time I was writing an intro. But
so I listened to this, and I was like, I'm curious how many rules of S.S. Van Dyne's that this broke. And I think we could debate one or two that it broke. But what was the most interesting to me is that you get through all these copious rules that he comes up with, and you get to rule number 20, and he says, well, just to have a round number 20, I'm just going to list a bunch of cliches that a mystery writer should absolutely never use. And he lists 8, 9 of them. And the very last on his list of 20 things you should never do is the cipher or code letter, which is eventually unraveled by the sleuth. So I don't know if the radio writers read this and just went, screw you, Van Dyne.
I was just thinking how fun it would be. What a great inside joke if you owned a boat and you named it S.S. Van Dyne. What were you saying? Because I was thinking about my boat.
I just have a suspicion the writers would go, S.S. who?
This is the first I've heard of S.S. Van Dyne. Let me guess. We talk about it on every single podcast, and I forgot.
Tim just did remind you that we listened to another episode from the series and did mention S.S. Van Dyne as a writer.
We've probably talked about it more now than we did then.
But. Yeah. Okay, but when was this guy alive, and when did he write this list of murder mystery?
1920, so it was during the height of the Golden Age, or at least the beginning of the Golden Age of mysteries.
So if we could just start at the top and work our way down, I don't know. We can do this anyway. I don't know why I'm putting rules to our discussion.
300 some episodes in, and now you're trying to give it to
the 22 rules of discussing this episode.
Yes. The organ opening and closing just went on forever. I have no comment on that. It doesn't bother me or anything.
I know why they do that, but it's just always hilarious.
It's so hilarious that it goes on so long.
I feel a little guilty because now that we've been doing this podcast so long, every time that happens when I'm listening to one, I'm like, oh, thank you. That's like 5 minutes worth of story I don't have to remember for the discussion.
So when there is... In a lot of old-time radio, especially stuff that's just supposed to be fun, the shadow, you know, I can name a number of things that aren't supposed to be works of art. They're supposed to be fun. So it sucks to sit there and go, let me show you the plot holes you can drive a truck through, because you're supposed to let that go and just have fun, right? But every now and then, there is something that sticks out that actually almost ruins it for me. Like, okay. And so here's mine in this. It just stuck with me. I'm like, really, somebody should have rewrote this a little bit. So he deciphers the code, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tells these people, all right, I know where the next holdup's going to be, right? I know what party's going to be at. So instead of having like undercover cops inside the party or warning the people at the party, they let the party go on. So these guys get in, pull guns on these people. Then the weird thing was the cops come and knock on the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've locked the door. The cops can't. So all of this is this. Why would you not give them a heads up? Why would you not prepare these people that Second, when the cops knock on the door, we're the cops. We know you're in there. You've automatically just created a potential hostage situation, right? That's ridiculous. Knock, knock, knock. We're the cops. I know that you're in there with guns. That's a terrible, terrible plan. I don't know. There was just something about that whole setup that just made me crazy, that we know where they're going to be next. Let's get them instead of let's let them get their guns out, pointed at the guests' heads, and then we'll show up and knock on the door. So that's your plan?
I will give you my pitch for a fill-in there.
Yes, please.
If they show up and these people are inside, not robbing anyone and not pulling guns, they can't arrest them.
But they got in somehow. The robbers. The door was locked and the robbers got in. Because
the woman's in on it, Mrs. Blake.
Right. We figured that out later. Okay. That helps a little bit.
Also, I could be wrong. I interpreted.
That's a joke for one listener.
Are you happy, listener? I pronounced interpret correctly. That the cops got the clue from Philo Vance and went straight there and the party was already in progress. Was there something in this story to suggest that they just sat around waiting? They got the date of the party is 2 weeks out.
Neither way was told to us. We don't know if it was. But here's the deal.
When it's the next scene to me, especially in a fast-paced show like this.
The party was going on.
I just figured they got there just then.
Then let me blow this apart. Okay, party's going on. We got to get over there. Still knocking on the door, knowing the robber's in there, creates a hostage situation. It's bad copping.
Yeah. To me, that goes back to the genre it is. Like, that's
absolutely
a expectation of a more naturalistic program.
And that's what I said at the top of this. Like, I feel stupid for poking a hole in a show that isn't intended to be...
Not to be airtight.
But sometimes they pull me out, and I was like, I had to go back and listen to stuff because I was like, wait, 20 minutes have gone by, and I'm still mad about the knock on the door. So the second thing I just want to say, and this is... I had a hard time getting over the actor that plays Philo Vance. So over the top. Yes, you used to be the announcer for Superman because that's what you're doing here as he talks. Not a big fan of his delivery, and it was weird to me.
I have a hard time getting past Beck's voice in this, partly because I associate it with Superman.
So you agree with me?
I feel like he's about to start yelling about Kellogg's Pep at any moment and tell us what Jimmy Olsen has been up to.
Yeah.
But beyond that, the voice is... odd, and I don't mind a really over the top. I like eccentric detectives, but it doesn't seem to match Philo Vance's eccentricity. It doesn't seem foppish to me. It doesn't seem erudite. It does seem like the announcer from Superman became a detective.
Yes. Oh, I am so happy right now. These rare moments where Joshua and I agree.
Give me time. I'll...
That was really fun. We agreed on something. Tim, did you hate him too?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm not going to sit here and like, no, he was so good. You loved him. But it's fine.
Oh, and I don't think he's a terrible actor. It's an intriguing voice. There's a reason he was the announcer for Superman. Mm-hmm.
His voice is great for that.
I thought it was odd casting. So I just want to be clear. I'm not raking him as an actor over the coals. The blue coals.
I agree with you. I think it's miscast.
I can't figure out if it's trying to update Philo Vance and make him a little more 1940s-esque.
Right.
Or if it's just a not very successful version of Philo Vance. But again, I love detective stories for the detective. So that's what I'm going to nitpick on. I immediately started listening to this. Saw the title. Immediately started listening to it and went, oh, I know why Tim brought this. It's because there are ciphers in it. It's the puzzle.
And with both this and the Cheesecake Murders one, it's the trappings
like
of the
cheesecake.
Store. I love cheesecake. I love codes. Like they have the Da Vinci's cheesecake code.
On a submarine.
Yes. Oh, that's, yeah. But it is the trappings of the story and the elements of the story that I enjoyed more necessarily than the detective character. So I won't like you're all wrong about this depiction of Philo Vance. I enjoyed just the code and the snotty move of we're going to use your name as our code.
Although that's a very finite number of addresses that you can get to if you want to use actual words.
Thank you for breaking into the next thing. I, of course, don't understand any. Wordle is super fun for me. It's about where I draw the line at puzzles. I didn't quite understand the cipher of this. Each letter matches a number.
Yes.
The cipher for that was his own name. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the P, if that's the ninth letter of the alphabet, I don't know what it is.
Just to make sure I understood it, I wrote it out. So I am showing Eric.
Oh.
Yes. His name has 10 letters.
Uh-huh.
The first letter is P, so that's number one. I'm describing it as it's being shown here. H is the second letter, so that's number two. And all the way through Final Advance, the last E is zero.
So the first one was Live On?
Yes.
And you can spell that out of Philo Vance?
Yep.
Okay.
I double checked it all. I was like, I don't believe it.
That a boy. And the second one was More Mustard? What was it? I don't remember.
It was like Bimbop or something. It was like they were ordering something like Korean food, I think.
So it tells you something. It tells you the street address and the street number. Is that
what so I'm long gonna... as the address is a number and the street is a number? It gives you numbers.
So if they lived on Elm Street, this would not work.
Exactly.
So there's a huge flaw in their entire operation.
Addresses, it just gives you gibberish letters. It doesn't give you words. So there's only so many addresses where you want to be cute and use words. Like, we have to have a party at this person's house in order to rob them.
They have probably scouted these locations out and figured out a code that would work.
Well,
that's how I'm going to
help
them out. The
lucky thing for them is that the elite rich of this town have a party every day and bring all their jewelry.
This was my favorite thing of the episode.
Put your rocks in the bag. That was my favorite line.
Was the just sort of casual, hey, we're going to talk about classism.
Yeah.
This population of entitled people who treat their staff poorly, that feel entitled to rob each other, apparently.
Am I forgetting a scene that highlights poor behavior to their staff?
I'm trying to remember. There was a point where the woman has someone is doing her hair. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I didn't pay enough attention to that scene because I was so in love, whether it was the actor's choice or the director's choice. It's the best thing in this entire episode.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Is she's talking out of the side of her mouth, and I'm like, she has hairpins in her mouth. Yes, like,
exactly.
That is one of the most brilliant radio images I think I've ever
experienced. Subtle, but that the other thing in that scene that I loved, off mic, she goes, I don't know why I'm doing that, but I guess I'll do that.
She dribbles out of there. Dribbles,
like, why would I do that? Okay, I guess. I love that. Here's a question for you guys. Either you're going to say, yes, of course, idiot, that's what it was, or what are you talking about? So I can't wait to see that party that Philo goes to. Was there an allusion to the fact this was a swinger party?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wasn't wrong, because at midnight, we'll flip this light, and everybody goes back to their real partner. You're being eyed up. You're being checked out. Is that his wife? No, 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 she laughs. She wouldn't be next to him at this party. She's over there with the other guy. There's this insinuation. It's a swinger party.
It's barely an insinuation.
I didn't think they were invented till the 70s.
Oh, Eric.
They swung back then?
It does have the odd structure of like, okay, we're going to be out hanging out with our people who are not our partners and schmoozing, and then the lights will go out, and you have to go back to your partner then.
Yeah. I was wondering if you guys are going to go, what are you talking about? Or I'm just relieved that I'm right.
Turn the lights back on.
Why do you ask that every episode?
Did you know? Get your rocks out of that bag and go back to your wife.
There's our new t-shirt. Is this a swinger party?
Yeah, but there's something odd in that moment, though, because Vance uses that conversation to foil the criminals by turning off the lights. And what I wondered, how do you foil them? Was it that he turned off the lights and like all the spouses running back to their right spouses sort of caused all this confusion?
Yeah. She
gave him the important secret information of here's where the light switch is.
Yeah, just being in the dark, I guess, was confusing for the robbers.
This is an episode that started out so strong that it ended up disappointing me. because the hook is fantastic. I mean, it's a little clunky, the cops narrating yes. their action, but
right.
the general idea of, oh, cops show up at the robbery, two guys are jumping out of the window, or they've just robbed this house, and the other guy turns around and shoots his own accomplice, and then they find a cryptic mm-hmm. note on the dead body. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I know why Tim chose this. And then the next scene, they explain it away in the most mundane way possible.
He got it immediately. Like, yeah. the cipher was solved in his head.
The cipher is solved immediately in his head. We aren't allowed into his head to find out. But also, immediately, we go to the bad guy's house, and it's explained why he shot the accomplice. I was afraid he'd talk.
Right.
Which is a fine solution, but it's like all the mystery's gone.
There's two problems. One, they've named it the cipher murder. They shouldn't have done that because then live on, we don't know it's a cipher. We know immediately because of the title, that's a cipher. That's a mistake. In addition, we should be led for 20 minutes of why did he have live on in his pocket to find out at the end for him to go, wait, I think I've got it. That's a cipher. Let me try something. But instead it was, you guys be ready. There's going to be a cipher. Oh, that note's the cipher. Oh, I've already solved it, so the rest of this is getting to the castle eventually.
I mean, it fits Philo Vance's character to tell the police, I solved it, and I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah? Is that a Philo Vance move?
He is a very conceited and condescending detective character. But it doesn't fit with the fair play rules that S.S. Van Dyne tried to operate. By, right? Because we don't get any of the information needed to solve this.
Right.
We get a few, right? I caught and just assumed it was sloppy writing. Wait, you just described the robber's face and then said he was wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, was he wearing one of those tiny domino masks that show most of your face? And I just kind of went, eh.
He's wearing like a surgical mask.
Yeah. So I think the clunky style of writing made me not examine the story for clues.
Right.
So I think if I listened to another one of these Philo Vances, I would be more on alert to see, okay, what clues are they actually giving me? And I wouldn't write off a strange or clunker line as just bad writing, but as a possible clue.
I did like the, I thought the purpose of the, I saw this guy, he had a scar under his eye, was for the discussion of, well, why did you describe this guy so accurately? Because if I lie, then I'm a liar, and the police will know I'm a lie to them.
Yes, so they did try to hide the clue.
Yeah.
It worked. Made me just assume it was sloppy. I did think Philo Vance was creepy, especially toward the end, hitting on Mrs. Blake.
Yeah.
Beautiful shoulders.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was gross, but just because he said it twice.
It was gross because it was unnecessary and weird.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
No.
He was like a guy who does not know how to flirt.
Right.
If you
those
know.
Those shoulders look functional. It's where your arms are attached. Beautiful.
Knowing Philo Van, is he broadly more upper class as well? That he would fit into this party?
Yes.
Interesting. Do we have any? I will not discuss any further.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about, or should we vote?
I'm going to just quickly share the other two rules I feel that they broke. Again, not that they should have really been held to the standard. I just found it entertaining since well, he's got these rules out here. I have to look them up.
No cheesecake.
The reader must have equal opportunity with the detective for solving the mystery, and I'm not sure that they met that with every element.
Right.
Or do you think the code is?
If the listener had the opportunity to pause, which they didn't, the order in which they give you, like, here's the address, which they don't tell you is like, you need to know this address. No, they give you the code word for it. Anyways, the one thing that makes it a little closer to play fair is when he's initially discussing Philo Vance got involved because you chose him. That small little hint of, like, you kind of got him involved before.
So what you're saying is, in 80 years' time, when the technology becomes available, the readers will have an equal opportunity.
Yes. If I had not wanted to listen to this in the style of a person who can't press pause, I would have totally, like, pause, go back. Okay, here's the address. Here's the letters.
Right.
Okay, that's, I wasn't sure.
Or if it was
sure.
a book.
Yes.
I'm not sure if the whole solution involving the other wealthy guy who moved the party to another address and told them that the phone was disconnected. Did we have access to all that information? That seemed to come out of Philo Vance's.
No, it came out of him.
But.
Yes. Yep.
And the sound effect on it was great.
It was great. You could tell he had hairpins in his butt.
He is upper class.
Here's one where I think his murder rules are stupid. I'm not finding it, but I will just summarize it. But he says there should never be more than one bad guy. There should just be a single killer. Wow. And that they shouldn't be conspirators and no one should work together. So that was the other way it broke the rules, but I called baloney on that rule.
All right, should we vote?
I'll speak my piece of not classic. I think it stands the test of time. In that its appeal then, and that is roughly its appeal now. I really enjoy it because it's fun, because it carries more thematic water than one might think it does with the abuse of class. Yeah, those are the two big things. I like it.
I respect everything you just said and disagree. I can't find anything about this to say nice. I don't like the acting. I don't like the writing. It's clunky. The production value is not great. The story itself. However, I agree with Joshua. The first 3 minutes, you are onto something. Now, I think that was very interesting. But as Joshua said, it was clunky writing and the description of everything they're doing. I don't like it. Sorry, Tim.
No, no worries.
A lot of pressure here.
So who do you like, me or Tim?
This is not about you. It's not about Tim. It's about this not very good radio. No, I think I am coming at this from a slightly different place than Eric, in that I really like this golden age mystery style. And so I have more nerdy nits to pick with it, because I think I'm more willing to swallow some of the tropes that go along with it, because I'm like, I'm going to buy into this. I like these mystery stories. I just feel like this is neither fish nor fowl in some ways. It was still incredibly entertaining to listen to, though, and I do agree with Tim that it stands the test of time and that these are currently incredibly popular again. This one just was not my cup of radio.
All right, Tim, tell them stuff.
Hey, please go visit ghoulishdelights.com. That is the home of this podcast. You'll find other episodes there. You'll find other episodes wherever you get your podcast episodes. But if you go to the website, you can vote in polls. You can leave comments. You can send us messages. You can let us know what you thought about this episode. And, you know, tell Eric and Joshua how wrong they are. You can also link to our store to get some swag. And
yeah, we have the Tim is Wrong t-shirt that Eric and I are putting on.
You can link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and please support this podcast. We really appreciate all the patrons who already support the podcast. You are awesome. Mm-hmm. And if you do support the podcast, you get all sorts of bonuses, extra podcasts, Zoom happy hours to hang out with our awesome patrons, as well as the three of us. I will tell you right now, our patrons are more entertaining than we are. So you'll want to become a patron just to get to know them. So please go to patreon.com/themorals. Please.
And if you want to see us performing live, the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society is also a theater company that does recreations of classic old-time radio shows and a lot of our own original work live on stage as audio drama theater. If you want to find out where we are performing and what we're performing each month, just go to ghoulishdelights.com. There you'll see what we're doing, where we're doing it, and how to get tickets. And if you can't make it to that show for whatever reason, if you're a Patreon, we film them, and that's part of your perk package, is that you get to watch those videos of our performances. All right, what's coming up next?
Your choice.
My choice.
Yes.
We are going to buy a boat, and we're going to name it the SS Van Dyne.
We're going to get stranded on an island.
And then we're all going to wear Tim is Wrong t-shirts.
Organization that murders people.
Yes, it will be me and Eric and the rest.
We are dipping back into Dragnet next, my choice, and we're going to listen to something called The Red Light Bandit. Until then... Weird you bring that up. I was looking at bologna the other day and realizing I have not had that in a long time. And I could a good bologna and cheese sandwich is underrated.
Well, I mean, if we can find the bologna murder case on Philo Vance, I think
yeah,
we should bring that in.
I'll write it.